9:02 here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This is The Poker Show with Chris DeCero. I'm Rob Wong. Chris joins me in studio. It's funny, I was thinking of all the music that we could potentially play, you know, for the show. And this one, for whatever reason, didn't even come to my mind. Poker Face by Lady Gaga. Has nothing to do with actual poker, but...
Just for the record, I hate The Gambler by Kenny Rogers. I hate Poker Face by Lady Gaga. I hate almost every song that has anything to do with poker.
Really? Why is that?
They never get it right.
That's true.
I mean, they just never... I mean, write a song. Write a song about getting river. Now you're talking, you know what
bad
I mean?
Bad beat.
Yeah, bad beat song. Yeah. The bad beat song with bad beats. Like, anything like that would be great.
Really? You're saying it's not knowing when to hold them, know when to fold them? That's not how poker works?
Well, I pretty much that's like writing a song about hockey that says, you got to know when to score and when to not let the other team score.
When to dump and chase and when to...
It's fantastic.
Yeah. I never thought of it that way. Yeah, it's true. Those songs really do not tell the whole story. But this is The Poker Show here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You can email us. Our address is pokershow@fan590.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at WongSN590. That is me and at Chris Tessaro, T-E-S-S-A-R-O. Plenty of content on today's show, including Phil Hellmuth, the 11-time World Series of Poker bracelet winner. He'll join us later in the show. You can tweet us questions for Phil at our Twitter accounts. You can also email the show, pokershow@fan590.com. I will also speak with Gavin Smith, the professional Canadian poker player. See how he did last week at the Fallsview Poker Classic, something that you were taking part in last week, Chris. And good news, I guess, for Gavin. We'll speak to him later, but from what you've told me, it worked out pretty well for him.
Yeah, so that place has been very, very good to Gavin Smith. I think he's played in 13 events at the Fallsview and has somewhere in the vicinity of like $880,000 in winnings.
It's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. it's not a bad run.
And it's funny, you were telling me last week after the show ended just about how many amateurs actually show up to this tournament. I mean, it's like shooting fish in a barrel for you guys, pretty much.
Yeah, it's not... You hesitate to say that, but yeah, to a certain extent it is. There's a lot of bad players that play in tournaments. But I mean, that's what the World Series of Poker, the main event of the World Series of Poker, and people look at me strange when I tell them this, but honestly, it is the greatest collection of bad poker players in the world.
Yeah,
because it's everybody's dream, and no matter how bad you are, if you can scrape together the buy-in or the satellite, then you're in there and playing. But you know, that's a story for another day. We'll talk lots about main events, but I'm glad you gave out the Twitter addresses because... We got a very, very cool prize to give away.
Yep.
And I don't know how we're gonna do it yet. Yeah, courtesy of Party Poker are the sponsors of the show. And believe me when I tell you that Party Poker is the people that made this whole poker show possible. And we couldn't be more grateful, and you couldn't ask for a better sponsor. You know, I've known the people from Party for quite a long time, and you know, when people ask me all the time what site they should go play on, and I always say, try and play on one that's safe and legal. It's usually a good hint, and Party as a publicly traded company falls right into that. But what we're going to do is Party has donated a seat in the Montreal Party Poker Classic, a great charity tournament that's taking place at the end of March. With the end result of that tournament is... they're going to give away 10 seats to the World Poker Tour 5 Diamond Bellagio Classic. Those are $10,000 seats.
That's crazy.
So there's a tournament in Montreal that can get you there that Party Poker is, you know, very, very nicely, graciously offered to sponsor. And even better, they're going to give us something to give away. And we'd love to give stuff away. So we'll have to figure out how to do that.
Yeah, we will.
We'll tell you a little later on in the show exactly what we have to give away. And then next week, we'll hammer out the details of what it's going to be and let you know how to do it. But I like the Twitter idea. I think it's going to have to be tied into Twitter somehow.
Yeah, everything's tied into Twitter nowadays. I mean, you can't talk about anything without mentioning Twitter. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at WongSN590 and at Chris DeCero. And you mentioned Montreal and a big story out of Quebec this week. And that would be last year's World Series of Poker main event champion, Jonathan Duhamel, finally getting his poker bracelet recovered. If you didn't hear about the story... there was a home invasion at Duhamel's apartment in Quebec, and I guess it was orchestrated by an ex-girlfriend and two other assailants. And obviously, they've been charged and arrested, and that's going on right now, but the World Series of Poker bracelet was recovered. It looked like they tried to scratch his name off the back and try to pretty much erase any chance that that it was even owned by Duhamel. But obviously they couldn't. You can kind of tell it's in police possession right now because they need it as evidence. But I mean, it's just an unbelievable story, first of all. But it's nice to hear that Duhamel, and it's not even so much the value of it; it's just the sentimental value of getting that bracelet back.
You know, it's funny. World Series of Poker bracelets, that's what everybody covets. Everybody wants one. And guys win them and then they put them away. There's very few people that wear them. Our guest later on in the show is one of the few that will wear his bracelets from the World Series
of Poker.
They
just go up his arm, all 11 of them?
Yeah, he just wears one. And I can't remember which one it is that he wears, but it has a sentimental value to him. But Jonathan Duhamel had his safely put away in a safe in his apartment and, of course, got robbed for a large chunk of cash, which poker players tend to have hanging around, and lost the bracelet. So I'm glad that he got it back. Something like that is irreplaceable. There's no doubt. Money can't buy it. And I don't know what kind of idiots these guys were that they didn't just pry the diamonds out of it, melt it down, and get rid of it. But, you know, scratching his name off with a rusty nail probably sounds like the next best bet. But I'm happy that he got it back, so...
I mean, we hear about home invasions happening all the time, but in the poker world, does this happen often? Are there, people breaking into people's houses and stealing things that you've heard of?
Well, I think most of the big name poker players that, may have considerable bankrolls, they have a lot of money and they have very good security systems and, take very good care of their own safety. So I don't think it's really that much of an issue. What you hear occasionally is stories of the underground games being robbed. So, maybe that's another good reason to stay home and play on Party Poker because someone's not going to come through your computer with a gun to try and take your money off you if you're playing in the back room of some bar on Spadina Avenue in Toronto. That's always a distinct possibility.
Yeah, that definitely could be a case. Another interesting story coming out, an article that you brought up, revealing the behind the scenes of what's been going down at Party Poker. I mean, you were reading the article and I got to check it out a little bit of it as well. But just explain to the listeners what this is all about.
It's not behind the scenes of Party Poker.
Behind the scenes of Poker Stars.
Poker Stars is a company that, especially with all their legal troubles, has taken great pains to keep everything secret as to what their goings on are. And as some people may or may not know, PokerStars is owned by a Canadian, a man named Izay Scheinberg, who was a former IBM employee, lived in Richmond Hill, just north of the city. Now, currently, whereabouts unknown.
Parts unknown.
Yes, running from the law. But Wendy Iolas, who's one of the matrons of poker, and a very good poker player of her own right, but an excellent writer on poker player. .com. She wrote a great story about a look behind the curtain, and it's interesting, especially when you read about how sort of sinister they were with pursuing members of the media that wrote stories about them that they didn't like and things like that. So it makes for a very good read, sort of cloak and dagger about maybe they weren't so nice with the way they treated people, and don't you dare write anything bad about them.
Yeah, it seems like one of those things that companies like that do, just try to take away all the bad press and try to make it seem like there's just some fantastic, company that's running so well. But we know the issues that PokerStars has definitely gone through. Anything in that article really surprise you that, you didn't know about?
I'm just surprised that someone knew as much as Wendy did about what goes on behind the scenes, because it's not something that's out there for public consumption. A lot of people know a lot of things about what goes on in the poker world, but the goings on, the structures of the companies like PokerStars and Full Tilt, well, since Black Friday, they've become a matter of great conjecture as to who the owners are and who's in charge and who's calling the shots and things like that. So I'm a little surprised to see it in print, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I guess, you would have thought PokerStars would have cleaned up their act a little bit, and it seemed like they're doing doing a bit of that, but I'm sure this article does not help that fact. Another interesting story coming out this week, Jason Somerville, a professional poker player, I guess he said on his blog, revealed that he is gay. He's openly gay now, the first, openly gay male professional poker player. And you always hear, in professional sports, most players do not come out until after they are done playing. But the fact that he is still, playing in all these tournaments, what has the reaction been to the people that you've talked to? I know Daniel Negreanu had a video blog and basically, praised Somerville for coming out, and you know, it didn't really bother him. I mean, it's all about playing poker and the type of person that Somerville is. He's a very good person, so it really doesn't matter as far as his sexual orientation. But what have you been hearing? What is the
reaction? It's interesting. I think there's a great deal of support for him, and people have really have stepped out of their way to kind of get behind him and say, hey, you know what? It's perfectly okay. We don't care what your orientation is one way or another. You're a good guy, which is basically exactly what Daniel Negreanu has said. You know, there's Vanessa Selps is another openly gay player and quite an advocate for gay and lesbian rights. And, you know, she's mentioned at times that she's taken some abuse along the way over her orientation. And I would hope that would get to the point now. I mean, you know, it's something that bothers me anyway in general is abusive behavior in tournaments at the poker tables. You know, this is a game that we all love to play. We enjoy playing it. So I don't think it's fair for anybody, no matter what, to sit down and suffer abuse. You know, whether your people are abusing because they're bad players or because they made a bad play or because of the way they dress or anything like that, I just don't think there's any place for it. I mean, this is a game that we love and really enjoy playing. And you know, you should feel like sitting down at a poker table is a comfortable place. If you're going to make someone feel uncomfortable, make them feel uncomfortable because you're way better than they are.
Yeah.
And you're just humiliating them with the way that you play, but you don't need to be abusive about it.
And what's the culture like in professional poker? I mean, a lot of, you know, the male, there's a lot of very good male players, but you look at athletes and professional athletes, and it's really a macho culture. You know, you shouldn't, you know, that's why guys don't come out, you know, professional athletes. They don't do it until they're done playing. But is there a macho culture? I mean, there's plenty of amazing women players and female players, and you mentioned Vanessa Selps as well, but what is the culture like as far as professional poker?
Yeah, I don't think it's that much of an issue, to be perfectly honest. I mean, Daniel Negreanu would tell you himself, you know, for years he suffered, you know, didn't suffer because he laughed it off, you know, to be perfectly honest. But, you know, people were always suggesting that he was gay, and I mean, far from it. You know, this is a man who just recently finished dating Miss Hungary. so he's not... You know, he's about as far as you can get from being gay, but, you know, he just laughed it off. But people would attack him over that because they thought they could get to him. And, you know, it's just, I don't know, like, are we still there? Is it that type of a culture? You know, guys are macho at the poker table. It's funny when you coach, sometimes I'll teach, you know, poker lessons and poker seminars for people. And I tell women players, especially good looking women players, you're going to have a great advantage at the poker table.
Oh, yeah.
Because male players will have one of three reactions to a pretty girl at the poker table. The first reaction is, all right, honey, I'm going to let you win this one because you're pretty.
Yeah.
Which is a terrible thing to do. The second reaction will be, no woman's going to take my chips.
Yeah.
Which is a terrible way to play. And the third reaction is, I don't care who you are, I'm just out to get your chips. Which is the right way to do it. But most guys fall into category one or category two. So if your testosterone gets the better of you at a poker table, you're going to be in trouble, you know? And whether it's in some sort of stupid gay bashing type of way, or whether it's letting a pretty girl, you know, turn your head at the poker table, it's just counterproductive to playing good poker. So, you know, there is a community, especially in tournament tour poker, where people, you know, they know each other very well, and there's always personality conflicts and clashes. There's guys that don't get along. There's guys that have had screaming arguments. But, you know, hopefully we can leave that sort of abusive behavior out of it, because there's just no place for it. And in all honesty, great, you know, props to Somerville for coming out and telling his story, because hopefully he puts other people in a position where they don't feel that it's something that they need to hide either.
Yeah, well said, Chris. Coming up next here on The Poker Show, we'll speak with Gavin Smith, the professional Canadian poker player, about many topics. We'll also touch on the fact that it looks like online poker in the U.S. May be pushed back a little bit as far as when they'll start to possibly legalize that nationally. So we'll chat about that next here on The Poker Show. I'm Rob Wong with Chris DeCiro. This is Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to The Poker Show here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Rob Wong, Chris DeCiro here as well. This show, of course, brought to you by PartyPoker.net. And if you ever miss an episode, you can check out the podcasted version of the show on Sportsnet 590.com. C-A.
And just to throw out, someone tweeted me and asked for a link for the Wendy Iolas story. PokerPlayerNewspaper.com. You can find that story at that site.
Perfect. Right now, we're pleased to be joined on the line by one of Chris's good friends, Mr. Gavin Smith, a professional Canadian poker player who's been nice to join us, taking out some time from his playing right now at the Venetian Deep Stacks. And right now, you're on your dinner break, right, Gavin?
Absolutely.
How are things going at the tournament so far?
Not good right now.
Uh-oh.
I got about 12,000 left. We started with 20.
Well,
so,
it's...
And we're going to, I don't know, like 4,800 blind. So I got a little work to do.
You'll be fine, Gavin. We all know that you can fight and scrap and scrape and, you know, all that nonsense.
Lots of other words that start with S.
Yes, that's exactly it. Well, listen, we won't keep you for too long. We'll let you get back to your cards, your chips, and your dinner, not necessarily in that order, unless you're having chips for dinner. But
no, my dinner just arrived is a nice pot roast.
A pot roast. That's lovely.
Yeah.
Discussing menu options with Gavin Smith. But we did want to touch base with you and talk about, again, this year, you were just up here last week, the Falls View Poker Classic, continuing a remarkable run at one property. You've played now, I believe, 13 events at the Falls View Poker Room.
I think 11.
11 events?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, and how much money have you left Canada
with? Oh, wow, I don't know exactly. Maybe like maybe 800,000.
I think it's about 885,000.
Yeah, it might be that.
How is there any other poker room, Gavin, that is that kind to you?
Well, I left the Mirage with 1.1 million.
Yeah, but that was just one tournament.
Yeah, I know, but still more money.
Now, like Chris has been saying, what is it about you know, this Falls View Poker Room? Can you put your finger on as to why you're so successful there?
Well, players are really bad.
That always helps.
That helps. But, I don't know. I think a lot has to do with just being so comfortable there. You know, it's back home. I'm always happier when I'm there and I feel really comfortable. And, but yeah, I just think, you know, that's sort of what leads to it, you know, and content. Like I hate LA with a passion and I've never done any good there. So, you know, I think that's the reason.
Well, whatever the reason, it seems to be something that works for you. Now, when you come back here, people ask this all the time. I mean, you hear the conversations, people ask you where you live now and what you do. But you've always been a guy who's held your Canadian heritage, even though you do live in Las Vegas now, or Boulder City, or whichever one of those Nevada cities you live in. But you've always held that Canadian flag very, very high and very proud. And it's something that you just never forget about and keeps a connection with people up here for you.
Right. What could be better than being Canadian?
That's true. I mean, as Canadians here, I think we're not going to disagree with that. We're pretty much going to give you the thumbs up on that. So.
No, absolutely. I mean, and it gets proven like time after time after time. First off, whenever you're talking to people, you always hear how nice Canadians are, and it's true. And then just how loyal it is. And when I come up to Niagara or when I go to Calgary, just the amount of people that go out of their way to stay alone, I mean, they, you know, they appreciate what I'm doing or like what I'm doing or whatever. You know, Canadians just stick by you, man. Once you're one of them, once they realize you're one of them, then we don't let you go too quick. That's why I'm still a Leaf fan.
Yeah, that's tough sledding. Well, no, one thing that we would be remiss if we didn't ask you, Gavin, I mean, tough year, not just for you, but for a lot of poker professionals, because the employing company for a lot of people, and in your case, Full Tilt Poker, shut their doors and let all their employees go. And you were one of those guys. And I don't think people quite understand, you know, what it's like to, you know, be a salaried employee of a company. And all of a sudden, the next day, no severance pay, no nothing. The company's gone.
Yeah, that sucks.
Has it been that much of a struggle for you?
Oh, it's been horrendous. I mean, I was looked after very well from Full Tilt. And to go and have the monthly income that I had, to all of a sudden not having any monthly income. Plus, you know, I'm the same as everybody else. I had money in my account, too, that I would have liked to have got out.
Gavin, sorry to cut you off, Gavin, but has that played, you know, mentally, has that affected you at all as far as, I mean, I'm sure you're upset about what has gone on. Do you find that has affected the way that you've been playing live poker?
No. No, it hasn't affected. It hasn't affected that. If anything, I'm probably playing tougher now because of it. But you know, I mean, I got by before Full Tilt. I'll get by after Full Tilt. Well, it was nice while it was there, but I knew all along that it wasn't going to be probably a lifetime thing. And you know, I was very, very lucky to have the income I had for 5 years with Full Tilt. But you know, I can deal without it.
Well, and you are dealing without it. And how do you set up your year now coming in? You'd be more selective in the events you play, a little more careful?
Well, one thing I really decided I was going to do more is probably play a bunch more of the smaller main events than necessarily the 10Ks. The 10Ks are kind of dying off, the tougher fields. So I think I'm going to be hitting more like circuit events and, you know, the 1600 buy-ins and tournaments like that. And you know, just trying to get more where the value is.
And like most people, I mean, it's been no secret in the past that you were someone who was lucky enough to have a good backing deal for a long time. It's in the poker world, that's something that a lot of people are saying, that the good backing deal has dried up just as much as the sponsorships have.
Well, yeah, that's true. You know, I was backed by Eric Lindgren for a long time, and unfortunately that relationship had to come to an end late last year. And I've been very fortunate. I found a new fellow to stake me. So, I mean, you know, I'm a pretty fortunate guy, really.
Well, you're a good investment, Gavin. You're definitely a good investment. Whoever's backing you.
I hope so.
Well, we're going to find out, and we will talk with you many, many more times in this show over the next while. And hopefully, it's as you celebrate another big cash. In one event or another. Good luck in the deep stacks at the Venetian, and good luck with this year coming up. I think it's going to be another exciting year for you in the World Series, and we hope to hear big things from you.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
There is Gavin Smith, a Canadian poker pro, joining us here on The Poker Show. And you mentioned backing, Chris, and I'm sure a lot of casual people and not exactly sure what that is. Can you explain what backing is?
Well, it's expensive to be a professional poker player. No joke.
Yeah,
I mean,
for sure.
Let's just look at just buy-ins. Never mind travel, you know, airlines, hotels, accommodation, food. You're living on the road for large pieces of the year, which can be really expensive. And it's funny that you see guys that are going to buy into a $10,000 event that pay cash to buy into a $10,000 event that are rooming with three other guys to cut down their costs. It seems strange, but it's just the way that it is, because often that's the difference between being profitable and not profitable. But a lot of poker players, the better ones, they will get deals from people. You know, like Gavin mentioned Eric Lindgren. Eric Lindgren was a pretty famous backer of quite a few players. And Eric Lindgren would put up the money for guys to play. And they would negotiate a certain split. Quite often what would happen would be something along the lines of 50-50 to start with. And then there would be makeup. So if you played three $10,000 buy-in events, you had $30,000 in makeup, which would come off of your end before you would get anything, you know, when you did cash in the next tournament. And it's very, very common, you know, in the poker world for guys to, you know, some guys will sell pieces of themselves off rather than have just one backer who supports them. They'll offer up pieces of themselves. So they'll sell, you know, percentages. And often it's not just a par value, which is interesting. If you're really good, you can get more than the dollar value for yourself. You know, guys will say, well, I'm selling it at 1.3, which means if you give them $1,000, if you want to buy $1,000 worth of their action or 10% of their action in a $10,000 buy-in tournament, you got to give them $1,300.
Yeah.
Because they're a good investment and you're probably going to get some return on your money. So guys will do that as well. And that helps cover those expenses and the other things. So that's a big, big part of the poker world. And what's interesting is that with this change since Black Friday, that has dried up as well. The poker sponsorships have disappeared. You know, you've got one of the big companies that sponsored a lot of people, Full Tilt, completely gone. Absolute Poker, Ultimate Bet, completely gone. Poker Stars is cutting back on it. You know, so you've only, the companies now that seem to be expanding their rosters of pros are companies like Party Poker, because they're the legal companies that are looking at the United States when it opens up that will have a shot to move in there. So they're the ones that are on the upswing as far as that goes. And everybody else seems to be tightening their belts.
And you talked about the online poker, and you know that continues to be an ongoing story. And the latest reports from the Las Vegas Review-Journal that a Wall Street gaming analyst told investors that debate over the federal legislation that would legalize internet poker has most likely been pushed into next year after the lawmakers did not attach an online gaming bill to the payroll tax cut extension. Others are saying, other experts are saying that there's still a chance at some point they could revisit this. But what do you think happens next with this?
Yeah, well, we talked about it last week, and I said, you know, I've said all along for quite a while now, clearly, I don't believe it'll happen in 2012. It's a presidential election year, and poker's a fairly hot topic for a lot of people. But I don't have any doubt that it will happen. It's only a matter of time. The state by state legislation that they're talking about now, you know, I'm really not convinced that that's going to be the way. It'll be the big opening up of the United States as a federal entity that will be the big news, and I think that's probably something for 2013. So the state-by-state thing, I just don't think is going to work, because how many players can you have in a state-by-state case? You know, Maine opens up for poker. So how many guys are playing in Maine? Yeah. You know, that's the question. So if you're limited to that, you know, you have to have access to the bigger networks and the bigger sites. So it's all going to be really interesting, and I think it's going to be fun watching it develop and seeing who the power players are going to be, who the big companies coming out, just like in 2006 when the UIGEA shut down the United States, Party Poker was the biggest company in the world, and they did the right thing and withdrew from the United States, as you know they were legally required to do, and PokerStars and Full Tilt opted not to.
Yeah,
and those companies exploded in popularity, and then exploded in arrests a few years later. But you know, now we're going to see probably the reverse of that. So it's going to be fun to watch, and I just don't think it's going to happen this year. I think you're looking at 2013.
That's the voice of Chris DeSero. I'm Rob Wong. This is The Poker Show, brought to you by PartyPoker.net. One more segment left to come on this edition, and it's going to be a good segment, as 11-time World Series of Poker bracelet winner Phil Hellmuth, the one and only, will join us here on The Poker Show. He is next. You're listening to Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to The Poker Show here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Rob Wong and Chris DeSero. Poker Show brought to you by PartyPoker.net. And we kind of teased it off the top of the show, and we'll take about a minute here, Chris. But got a great prize that we're going to be giving away very soon here on The Poker Show.
Yes, we do. We're gonna let someone come to Montreal and play in the Montreal Party Poker Classic. We're going to pay your freight to play in the tournament, give you some money, and I don't know if you know this or not, but coming in for this tournament is one of the most beautiful women in poker, Kara Scott.
I've heard.
Kara Scott is stunning, absolutely stunning, and she is coming in for this tournament into Montreal, and we'll arrange a meet and greet with Kara Scott and put you in this tournament and let you play courtesy of Party Poker. Great event, a fantastic event, and at the end of the day, you're going to get a shot to perhaps win a chance to play in one of these tournaments that we're talking about, a $10,000 buy-in main event, Bellagio 5 Diamond WPT event. So can't beat it for a prize. We're going to figure out a really cool way to do that. Hook us up on Twitter, email us, and we're going to come up with something next week. We'll give you all the details, flesh it out for you. But stay tuned for that.
And you can follow Chris on Twitter at Chris DeSero, TESSARO, myself, Wong, SN590. You can email us pokershow at fan590.com. Now, one of the things about this show is, and I think we showed it last week, Chris, we're going to get the cream of the crop when it comes to guests, whether it be celebrities or people in the poker world. We had Daniel Negreanu on the maiden voyage last week, and we're pleased to be joined on the line now by the 11-time World Series of Poker bracelet winner, Phil Hellmuth himself. Thanks for doing this, Phil.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Doing very well.
Phil, very happy to be speaking to you again. There's just no way that we can do a poker show without at least a regular dose of Phil Hellmuth. And I know you have a lot of fans in Canada. I know you have a lot of fans worldwide. But welcome to a brand new expedition on this show. And we know that we could just let you go for 15 minutes and people would be fascinated. But we have to ask you right off the hop, what's going on in Phil Hellmuth's world today? Because there's always something cool.
Yeah, I mean, I just landed. In fact, you guys called me a couple minutes ago, your producer, and I was just sitting down in a 10-20 game at the Commerce. You know, I was no limit. I was just buying in for a couple thousand. And here at the Commerce Casino in L.A., last night I kind of had an idea that if Dustin Johnson was going to be in the hunt, I was going to go watch him at the L.A. Open today. Now, he gets in the hunt, and but my friend, meanwhile, is saying, oh, I have a private jet leaving at 5:30. And so I'm thinking, okay, I can get dropped right at the tarmac and fly down in this private jet, be picked up in a limo, and just be whooshed off to the Commerce. Or I can get up at, like, you know, 9 a.m., get like a 10 a.m., get like an 11 a.m. flight to L.A., and then watch the back nine. And Dustin Johnson missed the playoff by just a stroke or two. Pretty exciting finish. Phil Mickelson was there. So I called DJ to ask him if he wanted to have dinner, and he's in Santa Monica, so he might come and play poker with us tonight. But anyway, yeah, so I mean, it does seem like I'm always in motion and fun things are happening.
Now, well, Phil, you're getting set for the LAPC for the next couple of days, I guess, or next week or so. I mean, what are your expectations going into this one?
You know, I was really getting to the point where, you know, I mean, I've been spending a ton of time with my wife after traveling too much. And so, you know, basically coming out of January, I was like, man, I just need to get productive. I need to start playing poker. I was really just missing it. And so, you know, maybe by the middle of January, I started, you know, making trips to Vegas or L.A. And this trip, you know, I'm scheduled to be here for 10 days. So, you know, I think that for me personally, what I'm battling right now is being able to quit. I've been having real issues with it. So I've won 40 or 50,000 the last couple of weeks, which is great. You know, I'm not going to complain about that. But it could have been a lot more. But I've been having trouble quitting. I played Chinese poker all night for 100 a point and burn myself out and then have to go home for a couple of days to recover. And so, you know, so the key for me today is to be able to quit before midnight, win or lose, and just get in the habit. I mean, people can form habits. When you're a professional poker player, you can form habits. And if you start booking $10,000, $15,000 wins, each day I'm trying to win 50, and it's just, you know, 12, 14 hours later, your peak has been 12 or 14,000 and you're not playing probably as good as you should. And, you know, and then it's just, I just need to work on that right now.
No, is that something, I mean, Phil Ivey was always one of those guys that was well known for that. Like Phil Ivey would lose one buy-in and then get up and walk away. And you know, bankroll management and that kind of control is a tough thing to do. And I know you, Phil, you take winning so seriously. Poker is your life. And I know that you measure yourself by the trophies that you have hanging on the wall, and rightfully so. So is that hard for you to, like, get cleaned out by someone and lose a buy-in and to get up and walk away?
Well, I mean, first of all, mostly I've been playing limit. So, you know, losing a buy-in is not a big deal. And it's, you know, I have certain parameters. I mean, I guess I'll say this for public record. But basically, I have a system in place where I'm supposed to lose only $10,000 a day. Yeah, so if things go bad, and it makes sense for a lot of reasons. It might not make sense when you're playing 4 and 800. You don't really ever get started with 10K. Having said that, you know, when I've played 3, 4 and 800 and 6 and 1200, I've won every time. So I haven't even had to suffer a 10K loss there. So it's important to do that. And, you know, I think that I lost 91 day in October or November and just didn't pay attention to the limit, and it was, you know, a really bad thing happened. One day I lost 50, you know, and maybe that day it was okay for me to lose 30 because the buy-in of the game and the people that were in the game and all that made it an exception. But I would just be really happy if I can do that. So it's important to do that for me. So there's a downside in when I'm supposed to quit. And if I could risk just 10K a day, I'm sure I'd make a fortune every year.
Phil Hellmuth,
you have to book wins.
Phil Hellmuth, the 11-time World Series of Poker bracelet winner, joins us here on the Poker Show on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Rob Wong and Chris DeCero. Sorry to cut you off there, Phil, but obviously you cut ties with Ultimate Bet last year, and I guess if we're using a sports analogy, you're kind of a free agent at the moment, looking for a sponsorship. How's that going right now with you attempting to hook up with somebody?
You know, we were close. I was going to sign a huge deal in April. You know, we figured about a week. We figured around April 25th or something, right in that range, for sure was going to happen before May. And then April 15th came along, and there were no online deals.
Yeah.
So, you know, basically, I'm in the process. I've been approached by three different sources, three different companies that want to build online poker sites in front of the legislation changing. So, you know that the state-by-state legislation has changed here, that the Wire Act was kind of ruled not to apply to poker. So, you know, we think what we're going to see is we're going to see, you know, much like states have super lotteries where they band together six states, we think that they're going to have, you know, poker sites are going to band together. But we think before that happens, the feds are going to pass a bill. And then what's going to happen is there's going to be, you know, the same thing we've seen in country after country, starting in France, next with Italy. Basically 10 times as many people as they expected to play played. And it makes sense. You know, anybody that just didn't want to take a chance, they didn't trust their money online, maybe they work in a legal profession where they felt there was some legal risk. And so there's going to be this huge explosion of poker in the U.S. A lot of people think that the bill is going to pass in the next month or two. And so to be prepared for that is definitely a goal.
Well, one of the things that's come out of all this, Phil, is it's a different world out there. I mean, guys used to roll around backed by companies or getting big monthly payments from companies and, you know, didn't have to worry about scraping together buy-ins and their bankrolls for things. But, you know, to play in the World Series of Poker, to play a full schedule of events, you know, you're often talking $100,000 to $200,000 for a pro like yourself. And I know last year we spoke to you just coming into the World Series, and it was a concern for you putting that together. Now, you had a great series, 3 seconds, you know, and played phenomenally. But coming into this year, you know, what's your positioning and your thinking on it again? I mean, it's a big chunk of money for anybody.
It's the same thing. You know, I mean, you're looking at, you know, $150,000 worth of buy-ins for 6 weeks. It's a lot of money for anybody. And then that doesn't, and, you know, then you look at all these other events where it just costs a fortune to play. And it's. I will tell you the starkest thing that I've seen. So, in December, I want to say the good side. In December at the Aria, great cash games. The place was filled, and it just seems like the whole poker world was in Las Vegas in December. And so Europeans, everybody was there. So that was kind of beautiful. And then, so I wasn't really prepared what was going to happen here at the Commerce. So this is like my third trip this month to the Commerce, and the games are horrible. Never seen games this bad here. So for like 10 years, every February, you came to the Commerce, and you saw 1,000, 2,000, 2,000, 4,000, 4, 4,800 games, 3, 600, 2, 4. These tables were filled with white chip games. And so this is my third trip back. Now, just walking in downstairs, I did notice a positive sign. There were about 7 or 8 tables that had white chips on them, which is huge. But the last two trips I made here, you know, basically the action was just really slow. You'd see one white chip game, maybe two, and it was everybody you knew. I mean, so I was kind of a little disappointed with the action, but that was, you know, I left Thursday morning. I'm back now, and it seems like things have changed, but we'll see. So, but to come here in February, finally, for the first time in 10 years, my kids are off to school and I can come and just play the cash games. And unfortunately for me, it happened to be the worst year to come here. I've won, so that's good. But
well, it's always good to win, Phil. And, you know, we're looking forward to seeing you this year back in action and in full swing at the World Series and not just duplicating your 3 seconds from last year, but obviously improving on that and getting into the hunt for bracelet number 12. It's always great to talk to you. We hope to have you on this show, our new show, many, many times over the next little while. And we will check in with you regularly because we need a little bit of Phil Hellmuth on any given day. So thanks, Phil. Best of luck in the next little while at the Commerce and the LAPC, and we look forward to chatting with you more.
You guys have a good one.
There he is, Phil Hellmuth, the 11-time World Series of Poker bracelet winner, a Palo Alto native. You know, he's not the only famous guy from that area now. It's Jeremy Lin, of course, has been taking the basketball world by storm. So now there's two people that I know from that area.
Phil Hellmuth, bet if we'd asked Phil, he could have tied himself to Jeremy Lin.
Oh, I'm sure.
I guarantee you he could have found a way to tie himself to Jeremy Lin. But listen, he is, people make fun of him and say that he's a bad poker player. I've played with Phil. Phil is not a bad poker player. You don't get 11 World Series of Poker bracelets being a bad poker player. I don't care who you are or what you say. And I would never bet against him.
We're running out of time shortly, but once again, we'll plug the Party Poker Prize that we plan on giving away.
Details next week. A seat in the Montreal Party Poker Classic tournament, which will be more fun than you could ever possibly imagine. And a chance to face-to-face, red-faced probably, stammering, the incredibly beautiful and very talented Party Poker ambassador, Kara Scott.
That might be worth it altogether, you know, just for that meet and greet. But follow us on Twitter, at WongSN590. You can follow Chris, at Chris Tessaro, T-E-S-S-A-R-O, for all the details. Stay tuned. We'll have more details next week on The Poker Show. And, of course, if you missed this episode, you can check it out on sportsnet590.ca in the on the audio on demand section, and you can also email us pokershow@fan590.com. Thanks, Chris.
Great week. See you next week.
Always great. There he is, Chris Tessaro. I'm Rob Wong. Sportsnet Overnight is next here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.